8:30, we are arriving at the fireworks factory of Blue Jays prospects currently on the 40-man roster. Not that there are that many to pick from, but, you know, we went through a lot of players that we can say were 40 future value, were 45 future value. We talked about Leo Jimenez, who it was like, he's a top five prospect in the system and also has a ceiling of maybe one day being a platoon utility player. It's not the greatest crop of guys to pick from. But there is one, my friends. There is one guy. If you needed to pin your hopes and dreams on a guy who has not yet taken a major league at bat, if you needed to think what is around the corner, who can come to help that isn't a trade or a signing, there is one guy in the system that you can lean on to pin your hopes and dreams. That is Aurelvis Martinez. You've heard the name more and more. He's been with the team for quite some time already. And to talk about Aurelvis Martinez today, I have yet another illustrious guest in the line of illustrious guests, and a little story time before we get into introducing him. I have said a couple times that I never really felt like part of baseball media, part of mainstream baseball media. When I went to the park, I didn't feel like I fit in because people sort of knew that I wasn't really there to do anything because I wasn't allowed in the, literally wasn't allowed in the clubhouse. That's how much of an imposter fraud I was. The team was like, we see you, dude. Nobody else may or may not, but we see you. And people who follow this podcast know, you know, it was independent work. It was podcasts. It was just trying to find my own way and find my own voice and do my own thing. And sort of accepting that the way that I was in my 20s meant that the mainstream appeal was never coming, that the mainstream calls were never coming. I was never going to be on the radio. I was never going to be on TV. And then one guy changed my mindset on that. And I am so thrilled to be able to bring one of the people that changed my mindset on that to the show. I was working at Yahoo Sports and had not been asked to do any mainstream media. And my guest today, one of the first people to ever reach out and ask me to appear on a radio show. You know him from The Score now, where he does some great recaps of Blue Jays series, as well as looking at Major League Baseball as a whole, has a great eye for the game, has really come on, I would say, last 4 or 5 years as like a really dependable, reliable voice in the Blue Jays, mixing humor and mixing, I mean, you have to be a bit of a fatalist to follow the team. That's just sort of the rules. But mixing all those flavors and really having a great job of interacting with the community, being somebody that people voice their things to, that is the gift and curse of having a run of time hosting Jays Talk. You remember him before from the Fan 590 with Rob Wong. We talked to earlier this week. Very, very exciting to welcome Josh Goldberg to the show. Josh, thank you so much for joining me, man.
Yeah, of course. I appreciate those kind words. I didn't know that I was the first one to reach out, but I'm glad because, you know, it allowed you a forum to talk baseball and Blue Jays to people. And I think that's great. And I'm glad that I could play at least a part in that.
Yeah, 650 in Vancouver booked me twice in 2019 when we talked spring training and we talked about Kawhi Leonard. And that was, okay. I was like, well, I guess Vancouver might hear me a couple of times. And then, no, it was you, you doing the Sportsnet Tonight shows and bringing me in. And I remember having just an absolute blast and that being real, real cross a goal off the list sort of stuff for me. How are you? We're always navigating the rough storm that is sports media. How do you find yourself currently? You feeling good?
Yeah, I would say so. Like you said, like the Blue Jays, I guess, alley of whether it's fandom or media or what have you can be, I would say, interesting at times. I've sort of reached a point now where it doesn't, like when I was first sort of really breaking into it and like some of the things that especially on Twitter I would allow to I guess bother me, like if I said something and somebody responded with something nasty, I allowed it to really fester and bother me. I've reached a point now where that doesn't really get under my skin anymore. It's a really, I think you could say this about most fan bases. Like if you were immersed in the Cubs or the Yankees or what have you, you would have the same type of experiences. But there is definitely, and I think with the way that the offseason has gone, the last couple of years have gone, there is a level of, I would say, vitriol that Blue Jays fans have now about the team. Like, you could say the most innocuous thing about a player or anything, and a large portion of people are just not going to respond positively. And I get it. It's been not great for the last couple of years, and the offseason was not great either, and there's not a whole lot of excitement heading into the season. But, you know, I guess that sort of is what it is, and it's on the team now to outperform the low expectations that a lot of the fans have heading into the year.
Yes, absolutely right. It's been, and you also recognize, you know, I mentioned this to a couple other people, but like people who really actually know baseball and media, I find tend to find each other. We sort of are able to see between the, like, who is a summer fling baseball fan who is like, my team isn't playing right now, I'm going to tune in June, and I'm going to tune out in September. And when my team comes back in, I'll get my takes off, and then I'll leave again. Real baseball people tend to find each other. And I think that you end up getting a lot of those vacation fans when you're talking about them publicly, especially on a big platform. People are angry already about their Toronto sports, and then the Blue Jays aren't good, and then they get the targets. We're talking today about Aurelvis Martinez. When I put out the call to you to pick out a player, I know you thought about a couple people. What made you arrive at looking into Aurelvis for a good half hour here?
Well, I think he's just a really interesting player overall, considering where the Blue Jays are positionally. I know that there's some thought, is he going to end up at second base longer term than third base? You mentioned it. There's not a ton of juice in the system right now. There's not a lot of players that you look at and say, oh, there's upside here. There's legitimate, maybe even star-level potential or some star-level tools. And Aurelvis has some star-level tools. Like, his power tool, I think, is star-level. Like, if he plays third base and develops into the type of power hitter that a lot of people think he can be, and he has showcased at points, like, he hit 30 home runs as a 20-year-old at Double A. Like, that's impressive. Crazy. I understand that there are legitimate questions about his plate recognition and some of his swing decisions, but you hit 30 home runs as a 20-year-old. That's very, very noticeable. And I just think that where the Blue Jays are, where they were last year, and where things are at third base, like, there's a major opportunity for him, I think, as soon as this season, to really make an impact. But I think the thing that I'm a little bit confused about is that the Blue Jays don't seem to be really open to the possibility of him having a great spring and maybe earning a job. Like, I think it was even before spring training started, like, he was already ticketed to AAA. And I don't think that that's a wrong decision, but this team has just been kind of craving that level of a young player coming in. It just hasn't really happened in the last couple of years. And I think he's the most likely candidate, in whether it's this season or at the latest next season, to be given an opportunity to run with it. And maybe, you know, you have a player emerge that you don't need to trade for, that you don't need to spend in free agency for, that can be part of the long-term solution as you look to, you know, build a sustainable team.
Yeah, absolutely. I look at the drum I've been banging the last, I would say, season and a half, is you look at the Houston Astros and how they did it, right? They were young core, we're going to build around. We like our guys. We like Bregman. We like Altuve. We like Springer. We like Correa. But they also hit a point where it was like, okay, now it's decision time. And we can move on from Springer because we have Tucker. We can move on from Correa because we have Peña. And then we can put our stock in the two guys for great teams, for great teams like the Astros, for great teams like the Dodgers. Aurelvis Martinez pops for them. Martinez makes their team, and they can say, we're not rebuilding. We're continuing on with this window and making some tough decisions, maybe, but grabbing some guys. And you made some great points to his age. He is still, this is age 22 year. He has two options left. He was optioned last year, and a 2018 international free agent, 22 years old, already been in the org 6 years. Crazy, crazy. That's how it works with having to eventually protect a guy. They're going to have to know whether or not he's a part of this team by the time he's 25, which I think is reasonable, especially with the track he's on. You mentioned AAA seemed to be the ticket this year. He is a guy that has repeated his levels all the way up and really had success the second time at every level. 2022, as you mentioned, as a 20-year-old, hit 30 home runs in AA, which is like crazy. Repeated it at the beginning of last year and was a 122 WRC plus guy through 70 games. They bumped him up to AAA, where he was 263, 340, 507, a 105 WRC plus, 28 total home runs over those 125 games, 11 in 55 in Buffalo. The K rate, he cut it down. He cut it down 2%, 26.8 K rate. It did. It was even lower in AA. Like, he cut it down a full 8% in AA last year, and 10.6 is the walk rate. Really did handle that jump quite well. Overall in this season, all reports are saying he matured as a hitter, trimmed the strikeout rate, increased the walk rate, didn't sacrifice power. The big thing, you mentioned it positionally, he basically was full-time second base in Buffalo. When you look at 2023, was that sort of the jump in production and ability that you were hoping to see?
I would say so. Like, I don't think that, you know, anything more than that would have been great, but there was no regression, right? You're looking at a young player and you're just hoping that it'd be great if they made like a quantum leap forward year to year, but that's not always realistic. As long as you're seeing some incremental growth and some improvement in some key areas, then I think you're feeling pretty good, as long as they're still on the upward swing of their trajectory and where they are in terms of their age. And he's still young, and, you know, some better numbers in terms of plate discipline is obviously good. He's never going to be somebody who I think gets on base at a super high clip. Like, if he can walk 10% of the time, that's great. But I feel like realistically, anything less than a 25% strikeout rate is probably asking a little bit too much. And I don't really care. I know that there are lots of people who look at strikeouts and say, I hate that. I don't want somebody who strikes out a lot. But, like, as long as you produce outside of that and you're hitting home runs and you have extra base hit power, I don't really care if you strike out a quarter of the time or somewhere around that. And I think that, you know, that's probably what we're looking at when it comes to Aurelvis. But having almost an 850 OPS as a 21-year-old at AAA, I know it was a smaller sample size of only 55 games, but, like, I think his bat pretty much plays anywhere. Like, I don't think he'd be overmatched in Major League Baseball right now. Like, I don't know if you could necessarily say definitively that he's ready for it, but I don't think it would be some disaster. Like, I think his bat is right there. You know, I think that there are some things clearly that the Blue Jays want him to continue to work on, whether it's at the plate or particularly defensively. But, like, if you look at his first couple of years professionally, there's been improvement year to year. And I think that it's very fair to expect another jump this year at AAA. And maybe he forces the conversation as soon as, you know, the end of May or June, if he has a good start. And there's not really anyone that you look at on the Blue Jays right now that you would say is all that likely to run away with the third base job. So I think if he really produces, then he's going to force an interesting conversation, dilemma, whatever you want to call it, probably early on in the season.
You totally nailed it with terms of the profile. Like, a guy, I'll take the strikeout and not being glove first as well, because they have so many guys where it's bat to ball, defend the position really well. I have said a couple times, my ideal third baseman is a bit of a not a butcher, but, like, I want a big, strong dude over there that crushes the baseball and doesn't take anything off the table defensively. Also worth noting, I know I use WRC plus, like, an 850 OPS being like a 106. The ball was flying out of Buffalo last year. Everyone but Addison Barger absolutely smashed the ball in Buffalo last year. And you'd rather that than anything else. I thought you had some great points within there. We will sort of run that along with what we heard from some scouts, and he is a guy that is on a lot of scouting lists this year. Baseball America has him 90th in all of baseball. MLB Pipeline has him 89th. Baseball Prospectus has him 95th. Fangraphs has him 66th. And Zips, which is a projection of how all of the prospects will do this year, has him 36th. The tools for Fangraphs, 45 hit, 60 game power, 60 raw power, 40 speed, 45 field, 50 future value. Noting, as you did, that he really did significantly better in terms of working deeper against opposing pitchers in Double-A. Did have an uptick in swinging strikes and strikeouts in Triple-A, but that is sort of a nature of the beast. What people are talking about, and in all of this, all of these different ones, is it's not a hole in the swing. You mentioned this off the top, was like it's a swing decision sort of thing. It's chasing. Nobody seems to think that there's a hole in the swing. It's swing decisions, it's plate discipline, it's picking his pitch. That is what he has worked on, and it has paid off quite a bit. Every place I look, TSN, Fangraphs, MLB.com, you name it, has him as the number two guy in the Jays system, obviously behind Tiedemann. 58 homers over the last two seasons. I mean, the bat is going to carry him. The real good thing, which we have touched on here, is that everybody has noted, is that he's made adjustments at every level. And that is the big thing with a lot of young hitters, especially ones that have success doing something like hitting for power. It's, I hit for power, why not continue hitting for power? He raised his OPS by 100 points year over year in Double-A without sacrificing the power, which is like really nice to see. He hit 30 home runs and had a pretty low OPS the year before, and was able to raise the on base by like almost 60 points, which is the kind of adjustment you really want to see. MLB.com, more of the same: 45 hit, 60 power, 40 run. All those sort of seem to line up, I think, with what you feel right there. It's the 60 power tool. It's the adjustments. It's the swing decisions, and not necessarily a hole in the swing. I know we're not bat plane doctors or anything, but that sort of those pluses and minuses line up with sort of how you feel about the scouting report.
Yeah, I think that when you're talking about a player like this who has prodigious power, like he is going to hit some major home runs, long home runs. You know, sometimes the swing can be a little bit long and you miss pitches in the down the middle of the plate. That to me is just kind of comes with the territory being a slugger. Sometimes there are going to be pitches that you just miss, you swing through. I'm fine with that. As long as your swing decisions are good and your pitch recognition is good and you're swinging generally at pitches that you feel like you can do damage on, I don't really care if you're going to swing and miss sometimes. And I think that that's what's going to happen. Like Blue Jays fans last year were very familiar with a third baseman swinging through middle fastballs. It just sort of is what it is sometimes. You'd like to see less of that, and you'd like to see more home run potential. But I totally agree with you that really at my corner infield positions, third base and first base, I'm willing to sacrifice contact skills for power. It'd be great to have if Vladimir Guerrero Jr. could be everything at first base, that's ideal. But I want more power. I want 30 plus home runs at first base and third base. And you know, right now the Blue Jays, they don't have that level of third base pop. And you look around Major League Baseball, the best third basemen do it all. They play great defense and they can hit for power and they can get on base. And I think Aralvis is, if he ends up at third base, he's not going to be a gold glover. You're just hoping that he doesn't hurt you, like you said. And I'll sacrifice some defensively if it means more offensively. And I just think that the Blue Jays are at a point now where they are in terms of their kind of franchise trajectory, that it's time to start seeing if younger players can earn an opportunity, because it's just not sustainable to be trading and signing free agents year after year. There has to be some level of dependability on some of your homegrown talent. And for the last couple of years, the Blue Jays just haven't really done a good job of graduating players within the farm system up to the major league level. And it's going to be hard to sustain any sort of longevity in terms of being a good team if you're not able to do that.
They sort of had their hand forced on that last year, right? Like it's sort of like surprise, Horwitz is on the team. Surprise, Schneider's the most important guy we have. Surprise, Ernie Clement is playing shortstop. It's going to happen to you one day eventually. You're totally right. You look at the rotation, right? They haven't developed anybody. They bought every single one of the guys, including the bullpen. The only guy that they have, Meza and Romano, and everybody else is a free agent or a trade. It's really been something. I think. What are your thoughts? You talked a lot about third base. Is it more of the same if he comes in and plays second?
I think so. I think realistically, having watched him a little bit, some guys have this innate defensive ability. He doesn't. I don't think that he's going to be a liability, like I said. But I don't think defensively his tools are fine, I would say. I think that you look and watch and nothing stands out to you negatively. But I don't think that there's even one really above average defensive tool. I don't think his arm is that great. His reaction time is fine. His athleticism is fine. I don't know how that's necessarily going to age, because he's not that tall. I think he's listed at 5'11", 200 pounds. We'll see how that goes as he gets a little bit older. But the fact that you're in your early 20s and not leaping off the page defensively, generally speaking, you know, that kind of stuff only degrades over time. But like I said, I'm totally fine with him being, even if he's slightly below average defensively or even below average defensively, if he can consistently have an 800 plus OPS and be 15% or better league average offensively, then I'll take it. If you're, you know, a C minus defensively or something like that, the Jays are good enough around the rest of the diamond defensively that even at an important position like third base, I'm still willing to sacrifice if it means more offensive contribution.
Speaking of contribution this year, we'll take a quick peek at the projections. Always difficult when a guy doesn't have a real peak, a way to get into playing time. The high end, some places have him basically here for about a month, about 140 at bats. The WRC plus is ranging from 84 all the way up to 92. Zips likes him the most. Zips also saying if he played a full season, if you give him 550 at bats, they have him hitting 23 home runs, 221, 289, 413 for a 92 OPS plus, almost worth a whole win. In a hypothetical world where you dropped him in to the starting lineup, does that seem right to you? 23 home runs in a major league and I will say a very Dalton Varsho-esque slash line, basically identical.
Yeah, I think that's a fair baseline. I wouldn't be surprised if it was a little bit better than that. Him hitting 220 seems, I know it, he hit 203 in 2022, and then last year in Double A he hit 226, but he did improve that to 263. The on base is a little bit low for me. I think that there was legitimate improvement last year, and there's always, it's a hard move to go from minor league baseball to major league baseball. And that's, I think, being factored into some of these projections. But I think he could right now be able to put forth at least a 300 on base percentage. I think he can get on base 30% of the time. But yeah, if he 305, 310 on base, slugging percentage of, you know, maybe 410, 420. I think he could be a 740, 750 OPS hitter in Major League Baseball right now with 25 home runs. And that's way better than what the current situation is at third base. The Blue Jays do not have, if I went through the third base dichotomy in Major League Baseball right now, the Blue Jays I think would be in the bottom third in the league in terms of productivity. There's just nothing that you look at in terms of what they're expected to go into the season with. That's a really discouraging development that you want to be a serious team this year and your third base situation is a bottom 10 one in the league. And I'm not necessarily saying that Aurelvis coming up and going in there is going to make it demonstrably better, but I do think it would be better. And I think there would be way more upside. And I just don't really think you have a whole lot to lose by at least giving him an opportunity to see what he can do, because you know what the remainder of your third base equation is going to do. And sometimes the idea of the unknown is good. And I think right now the Blue Jays are in a situation where they should be embracing more of that.
Discourse-wise, how are people talking about Aurelius Martinez to your ears? I think he's a guy that people have pretty high hopes for. We've said a couple times, there's not many prospects to hope on. You could look way in the future and say maybe Arjun, when I'm in my mid-40s, is going to be a contributor to the major leagues. Hopefully, I hope he's all this guy that reports is he's a great kid with great makeup and great tools. But in terms of impact guys that they currently have, there's some Alan Roden buzz, but I feel like people are pretty hopeful on Aurelius Martinez. I don't know that many people that are crazy negative on him. Do you?
No, I would say I think that there's been a little bit of, I guess, more, maybe not even negativity, but I feel like a couple of years ago there was a ton of excitement. And yes, this could just be an overall, just general malaise that people are feeling towards just the idea of the Blue Jays, that anyone associated with them, you're not as excited as you were 12 months ago or 18 months ago or something like that. But I don't think anyone that I've spoken to or that I've heard talk about Aurelvis, like he's improved. Like he after 2022 had been knocked off some prospect lists, and I think the helium had gone out of the balloon a little bit for some people with his projection and how they saw him developing over the medium or longer term. And now I think that they're after last year and the improvements that we talked about him making at AA and then at AAA has him back on a lot of lists, you know, like at the back end of a top 100 in terms of a lot of prospect rankings. And that's, you know, that's what you want, is just not allowing a bad year early in your career to really snowball. He really bounced back in a good way and has him back on a positive trajectory. And I think, you know, him and Tiedemann are really the prospects that people know. I think they're the household names for the most part for casual fans. You think of Blue Jays prospects, you think of those two. And I think that, you know, that he's at a point now where I don't know necessarily how much more he has to do before mm-hmm. he is really in a position where you're looking at and saying that, like, what else does he have to do to be given an opportunity at the major league level? Like, if he has another 50 good games at AAA, what are you really looking for at that point? At what point do you just say, okay, well, he's checked off every box that we've set out for him. Now the last box is, okay, come up here and see if you can make an impact for the big club.
Yeah, that 2022 is a perfect, I think, example of what can happen. Right, he was in spring and Vladdy's like, he reminds me of Hanley Ramirez, and then he immediately goes out and like doesn't get on base for like whole months at a time. it was a really good point by you there, that can be a really challenging part of a prospect's career path. That can really make or break you. And the numbers and the reports all tell you that he took that and used it to better himself. I bring up the Hanley Ramirez comp because it is time to force you to force a comp. Obviously, we're talking about very limited visual here, but in terms of profile, I have a couple that have been thrown around. The Hanley Ramirez, of course, came internally. I've also heard Gleyber Torres as a bit of a vibe in terms of a guy that, I mean, you certainly don't want him playing shortstop, but I mean, young Gleyber Torres was a real problem with those Yankees teams. What are you feeling? You can take this however you want. It could be vibe, it could be playing style, it could be impact, it could be age. Who do you what's your quick Goldberg comp on the Aurelius Martinez situation?
Well, I think that the way that he swings the bat and like his just overall look in the box, there is some Hanley Ramirez in there. And like, I'm not saying he's going to be Hanley Ramirez, because Hanley Ramirez was an insane athlete at the beginning of his career, stealing mm-hmm. a ton of bases. I think maybe people are looking at later career Hanley Ramirez when he was more of a power hitter. And I like, if he turns into Hanley Ramirez circa, you know, those Red Sox years where, yeah, it wasn't perfect by any means, but like he still had a lot of good years with the Red Sox. Like he had an 866 OPS in there, hit 30 home runs, had a 750, like had an 817 with the Dodgers. I think that something like that would be like if he hasn't ever has seasons in Major League Baseball where he's putting up an 850 OPS, you're loving every minute of that. Like I don't think that it's just, it's not fair to ever look at outside of a can't miss generational prospect. That's why the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. conversation takes on the shape that it does. Like if you're expecting Aurelvis Martinez to like be a consistent 950 OPS hitter, you're setting yourself up for disappointment. The likelihood of that happening is just, it's not super high. Like if he can be an above average offensive player in his career, that's a home run in terms of your player development. That's what you're looking for. You just want him to be a positive contributor. And I haven't seen anything so far that leads me to believe that he's not more than capable of being that. And if his baseline is an above average player, and maybe there is room for some spike seasons where he can be an all-star and be one of the better offensive, whether it's second base or third baseman, at least in the American League, then you're taking that to the bank and running with it. So like there's a lot, I think there's a lot to like about what we've seen so far from him. There's obviously some red flags in his overall profile, but I think overall the good more than outweighs the bad when you look at just the overall picture with him.
So let's nail down 2024. Do you think we're seeing Aurelvis Martinez taking major league at bats in 2024? Do you think he's here for a month? Think he's here midway through the year? What do you think our Aurelvis Martinez 2024 experience will be like?
I think we see him. It's probably not going to be as quick as I'd like it to be, but I think that where he's at and where the Blue Jays are at, I think we're closer than we have been at any point in his career to it happening, because like with Matt Chapman here the last couple of years and where he was in 2022, it was pretty clear that there just wasn't a realistic pathway on a number of fronts for him to be getting up here. But like whether it's second base or third base, the Blue Jays don't have an entrenched dynamic option at either of those positions. Like they can cobble it together, but you want more than cobbling it together. And I think that through a number of different circumstances, like I'm confident enough in Aurelvis doing enough at AAA through the first however long portion of the season you want to look at it to earn his way up here. So like I think by August, I think we'll have seen him up here, whether he's up here already, but by August, I think he's going to be getting major league at bats. And whether it's because the Blue Jays weren't producing at second or third base, or he's been so undeniable at AAA, whatever the circumstances, I think by August, he's up here and getting at bats.
Yeah, I feel the same. I feel like that second base, third base, it's going to be anybody who can hit for power can have it. Mm-hmm. Barger can have it. Aurelvis can have it. Biggio can have it, and it just somebody hit. That's how I feel like they're going to take that, and guys will get cold, guys will get hot. I think they're going to plug and play that as often as they possibly can. I think that's bang on. I wouldn't be surprised if they sneak an early one in this, if he isn't like a June. I do think August guaranteed will have seen him. I wonder if it's like he has 60 games to get himself on this team. And for all intents and purposes, for all the scouting reports, for all the development, for all the numbers, he seems like a guy that is also keenly aware that basically just doing what he did last year, right? It was exactly what you want to see, the 340 on base, the 507 slugging. That's what you want to see out of him. And if that is a repeat performance in 2024, I think it won't take them long to pull that trigger, especially if the incumbents in that position scuttle a little bit. If we have a situation where nobody is hitting for power and the Biggio hot cold is cold again, and IKF is sort of being used everywhere he can, and maybe even David Schneider, the bloom comes off that a little bit. We'll see pretty quick what they have in mind for Aurelvis. Before we go, one last point, the big picture on Aurelvis. I mean, this is a rare one where the big picture is a very big picture. This is a guy that they're hoping bridges the gap. This is the guy that they're hoping is the Jesus leads us into the 2030s. Is what I think the ideal world is Aurelvis Martinez is leading this team into the 2030s as Vlad and Bo enter their 30s. I think that's pretty succinctly his space right now. Would you agree?
Yeah, well, I think it's particularly interesting that I think a lot of Blue Jays fans, like, it depends, but, you know, we crazily could be looking at the last 2 years of one or both of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and or Bo Bichette being here. And, like, if one or both are gone in a couple of years, then I think in an ideal world, Aurelvis is a part of the solution moving forward. Like, he'll be up here. He'll be, I guess, what, 24, 25 years old, really right in his peak, where ideally he will be a consistent major league contributor. Maybe he's not as impactful as either of those guys, but I think in an ideal world, if one or both of those guys aren't back, Aurelvis is part of the picture moving forward, that you can feel not terrible about the alternatives. If one of both of those guys aren't here, then you have a player of that caliber making an impact and being somebody that you can hitch your wagon to a little bit, like you said, as we move closer to the end of the 2020s and into the 2030s.
Absolutely nailed. I'm not going to think about my life in the 2030s. No. If you don't mind, we'll get there when we get there. That is it for Aurelvis Martinez. Josh Goldberg, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate the time, dude.
Yeah, really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
You can find Josh's work at The Score as well as on Twitter. Man, coming up on 12,000 followers. Look at you. Big signal boost here for me. JGoldberg12 is where you find it. He loves when you come in and just harass him about the most innocuous thing he can possibly say.
Bring it.
You said it doesn't affect you, so that, no. Absolutely love the work and love interacting at all times. So wish you well, and thank you again so much for the time. Appreciate it. Yes, indeed, another episode of 40 and 30 in the can. If you're looking for more profiles, if you're looking for every single player profile on the entire 40-man roster, you can find them all and get them early. Patreon.com/lessthanjays. $9 tier gets you all 40 profiles. We are more than halfway there. We are sinking our teeth into the opening day roster, very likely, into the main roster, into the big contributors with some big guests as they continue to roll in over the next 2.5 weeks. We are almost there at opening day. We are almost there when it comes to the rotation, when it comes to the stars of the team, when it comes to the veterans that have to be picking things up, when it comes to the new acquisitions. We got Justin Turner coming up this week, Dalton Varsho at the end of the week, lots and lots and lots of profiles. And as always, the guest episodes will be right here on the main feed. That's enough of the plugs. I hope you enjoyed this episode. We will see you again shortly. I canned a bunch of episodes this weekend. So we got, I did 5 in 3 days. So you got a lot of guest episodes coming in the coming days. Keep it locked right here on the feed to find those, or again, grab them quicker, earlier, and extra content. Patreon.com/lessthanjays. Until then, thank you so much for being a part of Less Than Jays.